The episode you are about to listen to was recorded live on Fireside, a platform where the audience can become a part of the show. If you'd like to be a part of the live audience for our next episode recording, please head to the show notes of this episode for details. Now enjoy the show. Hi, my friend. I'm Sabrina, your host of the Cultivating Curiosity podcast. You're listening to season 3, which is focused on getting curious about spiritual evolution because us humans are ready to go beyond what our 5 senses can comprehend, beyond the logic and reasoning of our minds. We just need some guidance, which is where this podcast comes in. Every episode is inspired by my very own deep questions related to spiritual awakening. And my hope is through my own curiosity, both you and I will uncover an aspect of ourselves we always knew was there. It just needed to be awakened. Are you ready? Coach Dar, Darlene Santori, is that how you say your last name?
Yeah.
Santori?
Yeah.
Okay. She is a leadership advisor to top CEOs and executives. She's a mental skills coach to professional athletes, which is super cool. Author and globally recognized speaker. She has been seen on Fox Sports, The Today Show, Good Morning America, Sirius XM Radio, and here on Fireside, where she has her very own show called Awakening Greatness, Daily Dose of Dar. So I love it. And I also have your direct website in the fortune cookie. So anybody who replays this, if you want to just connect with Dar, use her services, feel free to check out that link in the fortune cookie. Okay. So you're very inspirational. And like I said, I listened to some of your Fireside talks on Fireside about, you know, just going after your dream life and on locking those barriers and just becoming your best self. And before we dive into all that greatness, I just want to hear your story. You know, who is the Darlene before Coach Dar? What did your life look like? Paint a picture for me of how you got to where you are today.
So I grew up in Connecticut. My family's pretty much all Connecticut and New York, and I have cousins in Jersey. So we're pretty much the tri-state area and an Italian family. So we have a lot of cousins and family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up very humble beginnings, and my mom was a barber. My dad was a tool and die maker, and we didn't have a lot, but I never felt without because we had such a big Italian family, meaning we would never went hungry, put it that way.
Yeah.
Even though they might have struggled for sure financially, and that was hard for them. I mean, they had what they had to make it work for us. But what I will say is that really from an early stage, I learned the ability on resiliency. I watched my mom and my dad really be resilient. My mom, especially, she had her first triple bypass at 40 and then had multiple challenges along the way till she passed just a couple years ago. And it was she's my best friend. Saying that, it's funny. And I always start off with that because no one ever said like, oh, you need to go on and become this. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that I always loved helping people. I'm for the underdog. I am so for the underdog because I really believe greatness is within everyone. And greatness is open to all. It's just earned by few because you have to be willing to do what you need to do to get there and follow your passion and follow your purpose and use your gifts to help you go forward. And so I started out I knew I wanted to help people. And when I was 16, my grandfather went in the hospital and had a stroke. And that's when I saw an occupational therapist working on him. Mm-hmm. And she was helping with his vision and his cognition and trying to help him on top of what all the other things OTs do. Mm-hmm. But it was just then I was like, what is this? And she started to explain what she did. And I was like, that's what I want to do. My father's like, great. I had to like literally pay for my own college and go. But I knew that going to help people, and this was an avenue to do it. And to go back a little further, I mean, I was in student council in sixth grade, not because I'm the smartest, you know, tool in the tool shed, but I'm very passionate. When I want to learn something, I will learn it a beyond. And I also like helping people find their voice. So in sixth grade, running for student council was a way of like, what do you mean we can't do that?
Yeah.
We just need to get people to like come together. And that was what started all the way. And I was president of my class when I graduated, but it was because I want people to be able to have a voice and to be able to know that they can, and we can make change. I won't accept no per se. If I just say like, why, what's the other avenue? How do we do that? And that carried on into my profession, because here I was, I went to school, became an occupational therapist, started out in traumatic brain injury. And that's where I started. Neurology, neuropsychology. That's all of my background. As you know, I joke around, like, I have like human brain models here.
My coaster,
love it. I even have a coaster that's a brain. This is what I mean. Like when I go, I go. But that was a start though of, you know, this is before Coach Dar. This is just me passionate about helping people overcome the most extreme odds. My patients, literally with most severe patients with extreme brain injury, spinal cord injury, multiple injuries, mental health injuries on top of all of this. And I had to help them overcome that and find a new normal. So at 25, I ended up having a stroke myself. I had gone to see a chiropractor.
What?
I had just bought the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. I was married at the time, ready to start a family. And I had hurt my back, you know, helping a patient, and decided after multiple treatments failed, I'm going to go to a chiropractor to see if they could help. Mm-hmm. And they manipulated my neck. They ripped the artery to my brain. I did not know I was bleeding at the time.
Oh my gosh.
So I finally, after the blood clot that ended up forming, I was getting blood that eventually occluded the left side of my brain, was left with the blood clot. That's when I really got the symptoms. And I ended up having a stroke, not paralysis. It was more visual. And they kept misdiagnosing at first. They told me I had a tumor where I had blood pooling. So that delayed the process.
So how long did you go with this before getting treatment?
I think it was only like, it was so long ago. It might've been like a week or two or something around there. But then when I went to the hospital, they sent me home while this was happening, because they misdiagnosed it. And that's when I found my own neurologist. And he's like, are you sure you didn't have something wrong, or like trauma or an accident? And I looked at him, I go, what? Don't you think I would know if I tell people this?
Yeah.
And he said, did anything happen to your neck? I'm like, oh, well, I had my neck manipulated. And his face was like, uh-oh. And then they found it. And he's like, okay, here's the good news. Here's the bad news. The good news is there's scar tissue that will grow around this area. Because the bad news is you have a blood clot in your brain. Mm-hmm. And if you do anything like cough too hard, definitely can't have a child, all this stuff that'll push this blood clot and your blood pressure, you could die any day. So at 25, I was hearing all the things I couldn't do. And as the reason I told you the beginning of the story is I don't necessarily take no for an answer. I was like, oh, this is horrible what you're saying. I was like, I wouldn't tell my patients this. So I just said, okay. And I was like, I left with having to process that. And I will tell you, I've learned over 26 years of being a therapist, I definitely stuffed my emotions then. I was like, this is not happening. I even downplayed that this was a stroke. I was like, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'll get through this. I'm not saying anyone should do this by any means. But I was 25 and I just did not want this to hold me back. So I was like almost not accepting this, really.
Yeah.
And that later definitely bothered me. But at that time, it's what got me through. And I ended up saying, okay, well, I want to fix healthcare. And I want to go take over the hospital I was running. Okay.
Well, I love the goal. I love the goal.
You know, I want to fix this. And the COO of the hospital allowed me to interview for a position that was not qualified for. But she said, let Dar come. And she gave me great advice. And she just said, you really could go make a difference in this world, but you need to go back and get more, you know, education and figure out what to do. So that's what I did at night. And then by 28, I was running a healthcare company.
Wow.
And then helped with other companies from that. But what I will learn and what's created this to today is that, and this is what anyone could take away, is that when you start learning what your gift is, which I started to learn around then, that, hey, helping people shift how they think about things, that's how you shift business. That's how you shift leadership. That's how you help people to move forward. So I started to take the practical information that I know being a therapist and helping people overcome odds, and I started to move it into the business world. And then when I left the business world to start my own practice in 2008, which who starts a practice when the world's in a recession? I did, with no safety net at all. But I was convicted that we needed to go help people because, again, suicide was on the increase, depression. I saw people just because they were losing their jobs or even lost a lot of money that they thought their life was over. And I was like, no, it's not. I know this is hard and I know this stinks, but you still have your brain intact. You still have your body intact. Believe me, you're ahead of a lot of people. Like, we could do this. And that's when I started my practice. And my father goes, what are you doing and how are you doing this? I'm like, I'm not sure yet, but I got to go help people. And so I mix science, psychology, and leadership together. So mixing the therapy that I know, mixing neurology, mixing human behavior, and then leadership. And I put that together with my practice. So it's unique in that way. I didn't know it was unique. It was just what I did. And so people are like, well, are you a coach? I'm like, well, I mean, like, more than that, you know, I am a board certified therapist and leadership. I run businesses, but, you know, however you want to see it, my goal now and what's brought me to where, what you asked, which, you know, how did I get to where Coach Dar? I didn't even make that up. People just started calling me Coach Dar because they're like, Coach, we need help with this. You're coaching us in this. So that's where it started at, where I started helping people way back before coaching is what it is today, where, you know, an executive needed to grow and how do I get to the next level? I want to take over this company. I want to start a company. An artist maybe could sing to a sold out arena, but they have anxiety doing personal interviews. An athlete knows how to play the game, but then they might have some challenges that they're dealing with that they want to either get stronger in their game or they want to overcome something. And so that's how slowly people started to come. And I have to say, I am so grateful and blessed because I've never advertised a day in my life, you know,
really
ad out there. And this has been all word of mouth, speaking, coach, everything. And so for people listening, when you get unstuck and you want to unlock, go back to the basics of who are you? What are your gifts and talents? How do they align with the world's needs? What is something your gifts could help solve? Where could you meet people with that? How does it help something, someone, somehow? And then find the spaces that do, and then start offering that gift. I mean, I started speaking for free before I ever got paid. And you have to be willing to do some, you have to sacrifice some things to get where you want to go.
Yeah.
But when you do, you will find joy because it will, it doesn't mean that it's not easy, but you just, I could do this and go hours without getting tired.
I could tell you're passionate about it. And going back to what you said, where you haven't advertised a day in your life, like that's an amazing feat, but it also, on the other hand, doesn't surprise me because like I said, you have such good energy and people just trust. I mean, look at that smile. Like people just love you. So like amazing, amazing that you have started this business and you are helping people. I mean, it's truly your passion. And it seems like you came out of the womb, you know, with this like go-getter mentality. And I want to ask you, because I think it's really important to share our vulnerabilities and be open about the struggles. And thank you so much for, first of all, sharing your story about you having a stroke at 25. I mean, that is unfathomable to me. I mean, I'm around that same age. I'm 27. So like, I could not even imagine. And I'm sure during that period of time, you went through a lot of self-doubt. You went through, I'm sure, a ton of fear. Like, I'm just thinking of like the emotions that I would be in if I was experiencing something like that. And you teach people to overcome that. So how did you, at that point in your life, overcome very heavy, probably dark, sad emotions and fears?
You know, that's why I started share at the beginning. It was when it first happened, like I said, I almost really didn't accept it.
Yeah.
It was literally like they kept misdiagnosing. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you've had a stroke. Well, by that point I was taking medicine to like mask the symptoms so I could function. And I was like literally going back to work while still sometimes losing my vision or having a balance problem. But I downplayed it to everything because I was like, I'm going to work myself through this. I know how to treat myself. And I was married at the time and I started to downplay. I was like, hey, I really got to talk to you, but they just told me I had a stroke and I'm kind of processing this. And then, by the way, we wanted to start a family. And so we go to meet with a high risk group and there's two doctors there. And one doctor Dr. Ravi Shankar, he was like, you are entitled to have a family. We're going to help you. The medical director's like, do not say that to them, because this is the worst thing you could do, because she could have a baby and then she'll die. Mm-hmm. So why would we do that? So we left with like, I left there with a burden of, I can't give my husband at the time a family. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I started to feel that, you know, especially coming from an Italian family too, it was culturally even like, I can't give my family grandkids, you know, I'm not going to be able to help my husband be able to have a family the way we saw having a family. Yeah. So then after processing that, I said, well, let's adopt or do surrogacy. And it wasn't necessarily what he wanted to do. And then you start going through pain and resentment and you're dealing with these emotions. And then what I did was not healthy. I just started stuffing everything and throwing myself more into work so I didn't have to deal with any of the pain of this whole situation as a woman, as, you know, not being able to be a mom or be able to help my husband with this. And then even with my family culturally. So it was a lot of things that I was like, I can't feel this. And I'm going to go help others. And that's what it was like, push ahead. And it really wasn't until, I really mean this, like years later, I mean, probably 4 years later, 5 years later, where then all of a sudden, when I started my own practice and we had gone through a divorce, I'd gone through challenges, you know, things did not go the way they should that I would want to. I didn't react the way I wanted to. It hit me. I started to process all of it. And that's when I felt depression for the first time, where it was summer in Connecticut. I remember this to this day. I was literally sitting and I had my hair on top of my head. I don't even think I showered. And my sister came over and I was so sad about a lot of things. I mean, a whole bunch of things that had occurred over the past like 4 years, things I wish I could have changed, done all that. And it was like water under the dam now. I'm learning from it. And I'll say for me, I'm a very faith-based person, but my faith really got strong after this point when I hit the depression. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I, we started a Bible study. And so we had been praying through this. I had really good mentors at this time. And I just said, this is the craziest thing, because I know I'm supposed to go serve people, but now I feel like I can't. Like I don't even want to leave the house. And that is not like me. So she came over and she says, you listen to me. She said, God did not give you new life to isolate or go back to old ways. You've got to use your gift and go. And I was like, I hear you, but I don't know what to do about that. And then I poured out in tears by myself. I prayed at that moment. I was like, God, if you really want me to go serve people and do this with the life, whatever I have or whatever's going to happen, then you're going to need to do this. And I had a BlackBerry then, and a devotional came through and it said, I did not give you new life or isolate. Like the exact word she said, and I just asked for a sign. So this is just what I'm sharing of what got me out. Yeah. Because it had been like 3 weeks where I'm like, I don't really care about anything. And my sister's like, no way. This is not my sister, my mom. And then I got up. I went to church the next day. I go to a non-denominational church now, Christian church. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And I started processing it. I started working through it. And it was like, I finally dealt with the things I started to deal with, and man, everything started to get better. So you have to deal with it. And I know it, but I just didn't. But when I did, I felt it all. It was hard. I had to go through the work, but it unleashed me, and I've never looked back. Now I want to say one other thing. This doesn't mean that you're not going to hit more adversity, because I had two more strokes after that. So I've had three total. Yeah. My last one was just three and a half years ago. And that was my worst one, where I lost my speech, my balance, my fine motor.
Dar, what in the world?
No, girl. I know. Because once one stroke happens, you're more susceptible for others.
Okay.
So when people ask why I'm so passionate about the work I do, I legitimately could die any day. Or like that last stroke did freak me out a little bit, because it started to take away some of my speech, and I drop stuff out of my hands all the time still, like putting on, you know, there's things that are hard, but I did all my own rehab to come back, because insurance didn't cover it, which is why I wanted to fix healthcare. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I was determined, because for me, if God is like, you're still here, then I still have work to do. And I literally put myself in this mission mode. Like, I'm on a mission to help people reach their highest level before I go out, so that I'm leaving a legacy of like, when I go home and slide into heaven, I'm going on empty.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I love that. It kind of goes back to a lot of the teachings and spiritual work that I follow, is that like through suffering, not that suffering is good, but like it's inevitable, right? Like everyone goes through adversity, everyone goes through suffering, but it's in those moments that make you grow into an even better person if you choose to, which you from day one have always chosen to take the hard route to, you know, make everyone better, to make yourself better. You just have that innate drive in you. But I think it's so important for everyone who's maybe more susceptible to be the victim to say, okay, if you choose to use this suffering and use this adversity to ask yourself, what is this here to teach me? How can I learn from it? How can I better it? It is here to serve you. That's what I believe. I know that that's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people, but I mean, that's what I believe. And we all have our challenges. And I genuinely thank you for sharing yours, because when I always have a really inspirational person on the show like yourself, I want to open up with that, because I want people to know, okay, this person's not perfect. No. Like what you're hearing, it's powerful stuff, because she or he have been through just as hard stuff, if not harder stuff, that you're going through. Mm-hmm. And it is possible to overcome.
Can I share a stat with people listening?
Yes, please.
We're all going to go through something hard, but if you're listening, you have the best stat in your corner, which we always have to look at data in sports. You've had 100% ability to overcome it, because right now you've overcome it. You're on the other side of it, or you're going through it and you're still here. Unless you're out, you're going to keep overcoming it. So that's a good odd. That's a good stat. So just remember that you have 100% ability to overcome it, unless you call yourself out of here earlier than you should, which I pray no one ever does that. So that's a stat you can lean on. And the hardest day you ever went through, if it's been in your past, just shows you. And if you don't go through anything hard, you can't build resiliency. And that's what you were saying with the sacrifice, the suffering. You get refined through it. You learn. You learn through challenges. You learn through failure. You learn through loss. You learn through it all. You learn the lesson in the test, you know? And that's the expression where they say, in school, we learn the lesson and then took the test. But in life, we go through the test and then learn the lesson. It's the only way you get refined.
Yeah. Oh my God. So true. So true. All right. So I want to talk about the clients that you work with. So you work with corporate CEOs, professional athletes, and these are obviously very high, successful, hardworking, achievable people. So from the outside, a lot of people might think, okay, like they have it all together, you know, like they've figured life out. They've got it. But clearly that's not the case. We all have, like we just spoke to, we all have that stuff that we're working through. So what are those one or two, if you can even confine them into one or two, obstacles that you see over and over in these like high successful achieving people that they just cannot get over that barrier, and you're there to help them get through it?
Honestly, the number one thing is confidence.
Yeah.
And people will say to me, no way, like that's the top CEO of this, or this is the athlete of this. And I'll say, hold on. You have to remember, because when you're really good and then you go into another circle where everyone is really great, you now are going, wow, they're really good. Meaning there's always levels. There's always people that maybe are going to be better. And what happens is people start to doubt themselves. They start to think, maybe I'm not as good. They go through a hard time, or adversity comes and it makes them question themselves. So they are not immune to having this lack, this sometimes doubt in themselves, or they are not immune to not feeling confident all the time. Mm-hmm. It happens, and that they need, because everyone wants something from them. And so I really come alongside it as a trusted advisor to say, help them reframe the situation, help them remember what their gifts and talents are, and help them get the mental edge that they need and ability to stay emotionally agile, to pivot through all adversity. And what happens with working with me over time is that they bounce back faster. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to mean that they won't doubt themselves again. It's not going to mean that they won't have tough days. It's not going to mean that they won't suffer adversity. It just means when it comes, they have the tools to know how to handle it so they can bounce back faster, which is what makes great, great. Not the accomplishments. It's how you show up in life. It's how you come back from adversity. That's what shows a great leader. That's what shows a great human. And, you know, in my world in sports, 30 for 30 is a show that's on ESPN, and it shows people overcoming like the greatest of odds. And I say this all the time. Our life is the 30 for 30 in the making, and no 30 for 30 show has ever been, gee, you know, your life was so easy and this is what happened. That's terrible, because that's not real and it's boring. Mm-hmm. But yeah. What the greatest show is how someone overcame odds and they kept going. So that's what I help them do. And that's what makes the great 30 for 30. And that's what makes the great business story, the great entrepreneurial story, the great leader story, community story, wherever you are. Just remember, they deal with it just like you deal with it. And you just have to know that the making of anything is the coolest thing, even in adversity.
Oh, so true. So what are like, what's something that you, if someone is really struggling with self-confidence or doubting themselves, mm-hmm. what is that one thing that you say to kind of break them from that pattern, or that one tactic or tool or whatever you utilize? Because that is honestly something I'm sure a lot of people go through, whether they're a top CEO or they're a student or whoever.
So I help them, number one, remember what their gifts were. Mm-hmm. Because you start to forget. I mean, yeah. A perfect example, I'm going to give one of myself and then I'll give two of others. So I'm in the middle of finishing writing a book. It'll be out now in February. Now, this is my first publishing deal. It's called The Art of Bouncing Back.
Yay. It's only a few chapters. So exciting. I'm going to give you an applause for that. That's so exciting.
Thank you. But in saying that, writing is not my strength. Communicating is. And so writing, I've had to have someone work with me to help me with this writing. And then when they sat down and they're talking to me and they're asking for me to write certain things. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
I got a tickle in my throat. But I started to feel so dumb. I'm not even kidding. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. Because I naturally just know what I do. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard to write this out in a process. Mm-hmm. So I left a strategy meeting one day and I literally said to Shannon, my sister, I go, I feel like the dumbest person in the world right now. Mm. And when I did what I would do to anyone, I was like, hold up, this just isn't my strength, right? I'm doing something that is out of my flow. But if you let me talk it out and just do it, it just naturally comes. So I had to reframe myself and say, what am I doing here? I'm like literally taking myself out of flow, which is not going to help the situation. Mm-hmm. So I reframed it and it helped me get back on track. So, and the other thing was, this happened with a player. So a player had a really bad game. And then when he got done with it, he's like, Dar, excuse my language. He's like, I suck. I completely suck. I'm terrible. I was like, oh my gosh, you get about two more minutes of that and then we're done. Mm-hmm. He's like, did you not just see the game? I said, oh, I did. That game sucked. I said, but you don't. You are the 1% in the pros right now. You don't. That did. So remember that. Games are going to be bad. Days mm-hmm. are going to be bad. You know, situations are going to come up. That doesn't mean you're horrible. Mm-hmm. You didn't get here because you're horrible. You got here because you kept fighting. You got here and you tried to keep getting better every day. That's what we're going to do. So reframing, remembering your gifts and reframing a situation is what helps you get back to finding your confidence and flow again.
I love that. Thank you so much for that reminder. Because it's so, when we're just having that bad day, it's so easy to be so polarizing and kind of equate it to a bad career or a bad life or whatever. When in reality, that's just your mind distorting. That's just your mind blowing something out of proportion. Like you need to come back to the facts.
Yes. I had someone, you know, an executive I was working with, and they're so smart and they are so good at leading their company. But presenting in a certain manner that they had to present is not their gift. So when they have to present, they feel like they'll tell me the worst leader. And I'll say, okay, this type of presentation is not your everyday normal that you have to do. So when you do this, thankfully, it's not something of what you have to do. You have people that help you with this, but you're asked to do this as part of your role. So just remember, this is just something, but this doesn't mean or hold any weight to the worth of who you are as a person and to how good you are as a leader. Do not forget this. Mm-hmm. So by me helping that CEO reframe how one presentation and this way they have to do it is not their worth. It is not who they, that does not represent who they are. And they're and reminding them of the leader and all their successes.
Mm, I love that. So you have something on your website. It's a quote that I really, really resonated with. And just overall, like one of your big teaching points is you really emphasize action, you know, taking action. And on your website, you say, quote, knowledge is great, but knowledge applied is wisdom.
Yes.
So talk to me about this. And then I want to share a personal story with you.
Okay. So what happens is whether people are coming to hear me speak or they're getting coached or they, or you just, you go to a seminar, you, whatever you're doing, you're taking in all this knowledge, which is fantastic. But how many times do people take in knowledge and then they do nothing with it? Yep. And then their life doesn't get better. Their health doesn't get better. Their relationships don't get better. Things just don't get better. Now, you could absorb all the knowledge you want, but if you don't apply the knowledge, you will not get better. And then you don't get wiser. You don't help other people get better. So you start to stagnate and go into this world of mediocrity.
Yes.
So I want people to understand that action, taking the proper action and creating momentum is going to be in your benefit. Mm. But doing nothing is, you know, there's a time to pause and reflect, but then you have to do something with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something I feel like I've always been a brainiac. Like I came out of the womb, like I was a type A, like straight A student. You know, I love knowledge. I love studying, taking tests, that whole thing. It's super nerdy of me.
I love it.
But I honestly think in a, like that served me very well in school, obviously, but it has held me back in a lot of ways, especially when it has come to my personal growth mm-hmm. and my development, because I have created this habit and this conditioning over the years of all this wisdom and knowledge, like I'm reading in books and I'm listening to in podcasts. I apply it and then I just overthink it mm-hmm. and I ruminate it. And I just, it's kind of turned into what I feel like a safety blanket. And I don't consider myself an OCD person when it comes to like external things. But for some reason, like when it comes to these like concepts and stuff, it's like I cannot let them go. It's like a dog with a bone. I just keep thinking about it and thinking about it. And it's like until I think about it enough where I feel like safe enough to take that leap and start acting on it. But then like I start acting on it and I'm like, wait, but I need to think about this just a little bit more. And it's just like a such a vicious circle. Mm. And I'm sure that I'm not the only person on the planet that does this. And I'm fully aware of a lot of self-awareness that that is what I need to nip in the butt in order to create change. And I just need to do it. So what is your advice, Coach Dar, to myself and to others listening who resonate with this vicious cycle? Like how do we break free from just that like trap of overthinking about what we need to be doing and just do it. Like to me, it's honestly like a habit I have formed and it's extremely tough to break.
So first, I love so much that you shared it, right? Because then you can do something about it.
Yeah.
And so, and you're not alone. You are definitely not alone in this. And a couple of things come to mind, which is you do need to take action. Because it gets you off of the thought process. But the way to do it is a funny saying, which is called go ugly early. And so go ugly early is that, remember, the first of anything is not going to be your best rendition. Mm-hmm. Your first speech, your first marketing, your first anything, your first ever out of the gate of anything is never your absolute best work. That as you do it more, you get better by doing it. That's how we grow. But what happens is the perfectionism trap stops us because when we overthink, we're like, I need one more I dotted. I need one more T cross. I need to, and while preparing is good, there's a time that you have to literally let the wind take it now, like go and get out of the gate. You can't run the race until you start running, right? Mm-hmm. The gun could go off in track. And you got to get out. You got to go run. But if you just stay there, you're like, I think I need better shoes. Well, I've now lost the race.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
If you came in last the first time, you've got to go. Okay.
Yeah.
And so this expression, I want people to remember, it's funny, but it's like, I got to go ugly early. I got to go. Mm-hmm. I just got to do it. Now that's one thing. Number two is you taking hesitation out throughout your daily routine of things that are not as scary will transfer to this. Meaning, you want to take, hold on, when you go play sports and you watch someone make the best play, they didn't hesitate, they took action. Mm-hmm. They just did it. You're watching hockey, they make the best slap shot for goal, flawless. Someone makes the pass, the free throw, whatever it is, it just, they took action. So when you are about to, in your daily life, you know, the alarm goes off, you want to hit snooze, take action and sit up. Mm-hmm. Mel Robbins does a good job when she created the book 5-4-3-2-1. It was all about that in her life. She thought, where am I hesitating? And so we want to take hesitation out. She thought, well, if I could get up like that, now what else can I just do? And then throughout the day, that's how this whole premise of her book started. Where am I not taking action? Because the moment we let ourselves hesitate, you know what the brain loves to do? It likes to go, oh, yeah, yeah, no, that's scary. This is safe over here. So let's not do anything. And the moment you let your brain do that, you're like, ooh, yeah, that's comfortable.
Exactly. You're so spot on. It literally takes a second.
Yes.
It's just a second of not acting.
Yes.
And all of a sudden the brain is, even though I know it's not the right action I should be taking, I know I'm pulling back into my comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's familiar and it's like, okay, but like, I'll feel better if I just think about this one more time.
I know. But I want you to know your brain actually is trained to do that. So we have to unlearn that, like, and retrain. So that's why I always say we got to retrain the brain. That's why.
Why is it trained to do that? Is safety?
It literally started with survival mechanism, which is, oh, hold on, go back to where it's comfortable. Fight or flight. This could be scary. And then, by the way, if I do this and it doesn't work, now I fear other people. Rejection. All the fears. I don't want to be rejected. I don't want people to think that I can't do the work I do. It's all the fear that comes in. Because if no one was to see what you were doing, you wouldn't have this fear. Mm-hmm. Literally, you wouldn't. Because there'd be no one to say that this is a failure or wrong. You'd be like, oh, I tried, that didn't work. No, imagine when I remember riding my bike and I fell off my bike in front of people. And I was like so embarrassed when I was a kid. But if I fell off my bike and no one saw it, I wouldn't be embarrassed. I'd get right back up and I'd get on. So, yeah. But that's what happens. So I want to go back to one of the action steps will be throughout your daily life right now, from the moment you wake up to, you know, your morning routine, or you're in your, or you go to start to write something or anything, like, oh, I was going to go work out and then I didn't. I want you to think of all the little things that you might be hesitating on that aren't as big risk first, and start winning those little moments. Mm. Win the day by winning these little moments. And then what happens? You start building confidence. You're like, ooh, I just did that. I just made that phone call. I didn't want to. I just had that difficult conversation. I put people in the cold plunge all the time. I'm like, get in the cold plunge, do the things you don't want to, but things that you know, they're not as scary yet, but they're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Today on Instagram, I just put that post up. So you go back and read it.
I did. And I think I liked it too. Yeah. And you also, I think today on Fireside, your chat was, are you walking the talk?
Yes.
And I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'm going to, because I was like, oh, this is absolutely going to resonate with
me. And talk just like you did, say, hey, like, this is something I'm uncomfortable with, but I'm going to do it. So try doing little things that help you win the day. Mm-hmm. And then it'll start translating to the bigger projects that you want to do and work on. And then remember, go ugly early.
You know,
I have this book coming out. I can't even believe the pressure I've put on myself on it, because I want it to be great. And again, it will be great. Will it be my best book? I hope I get to write many more. Everyone keeps telling me your books get better, because I hope they do, because I've never written one to start.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
no,
I can't.
You got to get out there. You, by the way, will be prepared to put out quality. Mm-hmm. So just remember that it's not going to be crap. It's going to be quality, and then you'll keep making it better. No company starts their first ever anything and it's like the best ever. It gets better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So have grace with yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. That makes me feel really good. You know, one of the goals, because I'm super in, obviously the name of the show is Cultivating Spiritual Curiosity. So I'm very into spiritual growth and development. And I'm super into how that connects with mental health and goal setting. And one of my goals is to just be present in the moment, because I have, like I said, very brainy, like very intellectually driven. And I just know that there is a universe, power, God, whatever anybody wants to call it, that is out there helping us live this life. Mm-hmm. And it's like literally my mission to connect with that source and mm-hmm. to like co-create my life with it. And I believe that one of the best ways to do that is to become in the present moment, because then your mental mind stills, you open yourself up to a deeper wisdom that's already innately within you. And I just want to reach that so badly, which maybe is part of like the reason why it's so hard, because I want it too much. But anyways, and there was a point like late last year in the fall where I just woke up one day. I was like, I don't care anymore. Like I'm just going to like let go of all those like habits and those hesitations. And I'm just always going to just come back to this moment, fully be awake and conscious for whatever is happening in this moment. Because up until that point, I was like suffering unnecessarily, overthinking things and worrying about the future and just fear, fear, fear. And I was like, I'm done. Like, I am over it. And it honestly, it took about a month, I would say, of doing that. And then out of nowhere, I was in a hot yoga class and I felt like I literally had an awakening. It was like the weirdest thing ever. And up until like the month following that was, I felt like I was living on cloud nine. It's like the hardest experience ever. And on one hand, I was like, oh my God, I've never felt this way before. Like, I feel so effortlessly joyful. I feel like I can conquer the world. I'm going to like chase my dreams. It's all going to happen for me. And like, that's when this fireside opportunity came into my life. Like, I felt like I was really attracting. But then on the other hand, I was like, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? Right? Like, this is like so good to be true. So anyway, long story short, like that is like my goal. Like, not necessarily so much of, you know, growing this podcast to be like the best podcast on Spotify or like getting promoted at work. But my goal is really just comes down to how present can I be? How can I better my spiritual health, my mental health, my physical mm-hmm. health? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe in a way that's, I don't want to downgrade anybody's external goals, but I feel like in a way, since I don't have anything to show for it, it's a lot harder to keep going and to like, some days I just have my like, is it worth it? Like, what am I even, you know, because I don't have anything to show for it. But it's like this faith that like,
that's spiritual. That yeah. Spiritual is not for the what's seen.
Yeah.
It's what's felt.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to know that this is not something that you're going to be able to see, but people will feel. They should feel the spiritual growth by your ability to be more present, your ability to love more, your ability to have grace and forgiveness, your ability to show up in your dharma mm-hmm. and your purpose. And so for people listening, dharma is purpose. And so when you are able to have that ability where you know you this awakening is happening and you are serving the world through this podcast, through the work you do, all of it. When you touch people every day with your gift, that is serving your purpose, right? Mm. And so spiritual enlightenment happens as we grow, and it is how people feel when they're around us and how you feel within your own skin. Mm-hmm. And happiness is not what we want to chase, because happiness refers to something has to happen for me to be happy. Spiritual joy is beautiful because that comes from within. Mm-hmm. It's a light within. And literally when I found that is when this light, literally that light kicked in. I was like, whoa, so source for me, it's really like God. And when people find a higher calling, mm-hmm. which they understand, you understand your life is bigger than you. You are here to serve the world. We are not here to gluttonously be about us. Mm-hmm. We are to take care of us so that we could serve others with the gifts we have. That is our thank you back for getting life today. And no matter, this is not about a religion, no matter where you are, they all come down to centeredness of service, love, kindness, forgiveness, joy, patience, peace, mm-hmm. you know, all of these we could align under no matter where you're coming from. And when you start serving in this space, look, it's like, how could you, like just even talking about those words, I'm like, ooh, that all feels good.
Yeah.
And you understand we're all going to be okay. and that we are serving something bigger. We will be okay. It allows you to have hope in something bigger. And so don't worry about showing anything for it. Just focus on being present so that people could feel the light through you.
Mm, so good. Thank you so much. I needed to hear that. Oh, that's so great. Thank you. And one of the last topics I touch on is mental resilience. So this is like one of the main topics that you teach, and that is your specialty. Yes. Can you start off by explaining to us, like, what is mental resilience and how can we build mental resilience and really just stay committed to our goals, whether it be physical, spiritual, or mental?
I am extremely passionate about this because that's literally all, I mean, every day, all day, I'm working on it. I'm helping people too, but mm-hmm. So just like I said, spiritual, you could feel resiliency. You could feel in someone mm-hmm. you can see. So resiliency is about how you bounce back from a situation and also how you handle it. So when things happen to you, it doesn't mean that you don't feel it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt. It doesn't mean that you don't have a setback, but what happens is you know how to make the comeback. Mm-hmm. You know how to process the situation to know how to handle it and go forward. And you also know how to handle it. So there was something that was really stressful happening earlier. And when Shannon came to my assistant, I'm like, I just need a hug today. Like I need a hug. And I'm like, I needed to breathe. And, you know, cause my father's back in my father's been sick. So we're dealing with some stuff along with some work stuff. And I was like, okay, I've got to focus. But this is where mental resiliency comes in. I've had to do it my whole life and watched my family do it. You learn the tools on how to overcome adversity. You learn the tools on how to bounce back. You learn the tools on how to, when things are hitting you, how do you digest this information so that you could still get up and keep going? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're going to have to pause. Sometimes you're going to have to sit. You're going to have to take an emotional breath. But then what do you need to do to keep going? Mm-hmm. Because resiliency is 30 for 30. It's getting back up. And remember, I said what I help people do is they hit it, but we bounce back faster. It's not that none of us we're not immune to it. We just know how to bounce back faster so it doesn't keep us in the lows long. Mm-hmm. And when people don't develop grit or resiliency, they stay in the valley too long. Yeah. And then you could get stuck in the victim role or you could get stuck in the emotions. And honestly, true, when you stay in the valleys low, you could shift the chemicals of your brain because it starts to go, is this the new normal? And that's just what becomes normal to you. So going back to after you've felt and dealt, you've got to take action. You've got to change your state. You've got to work through it. You've got to find that within you. You've got to have people around that are going to help you when you can't. There's a lot of tools. I mean, this is a book that I read. This is a 2-hour talk. I mean, I could probably speak. I could do a retreat all weekend on this. But to start off, I want you to know that resiliency is how you bounce back. And so to get this every day, you want to start with knowing that we're not going to be void of adversity. So going, okay, here's another challenge. Here we go. How are we going to handle this today? What are we going to do about it? You talk life into it. Mm-hmm. You go like, I don't want this, but it's coming at me. What am I going to do about it? Instead of woe is me, another problem. Why is this happening? Now I've asked, geez, like what the heck? Why am I getting hit on this end again? But I'm like, well, if it's coming, I got to deal with it. I have to.
Yeah.
What is my other option? What is our other option if we don't deal with it?
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not good. And so just you want to fight. We are all in the fight for life. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to be able to show back up, get in the ring again. If you need to take a pause, ding, ding, you know, sit down for a minute, get your breath, get back in it. Just like a hard workout. When you think you can't do it anymore, get your breath, go again. So whether it's your spiritual growth, your relational growth, you know, you're having a hard time in a relationship, you're having a hard time with work. Before you quit, I want you to pause, try to collect yourself, reach out, get help, and then say, what do I need to do to get back in this fight? And I'm asking you, just don't quit. Don't quit. Build the grit because you will be refined. And by the way, when you work through it, the next time you go through something, you go, oh, I know this feeling again, but I knew I got through it before. I'll get through it again. That's what's happened with my strokes. That's what happened with everyone that I work with. I teach them to say, you know what? you know what this feels like now. That's how you get back. A Navy SEAL goes through the Navy SEAL. You come out of that. Everything else in life on the every average day is like, what? This is hard. Where for us, we're like, oh my gosh. They're like, please, this is a piece of cake. But you know why they could say it? They went through ridiculous hard training, right? Mm-hmm. But they did that so they could just prove to themselves and to help our country say, like, we got this. So in our own way, we don't have to go SEAL route, but in our own way, how are you going to be the SEAL in the circumstances you can to build that resiliency and build up the endurance and the grit that you need so you could go be great and bounce back faster?
What would you say, Coach Star, to someone who maybe has been in that low, has been in that valley for a really long time, and they're kind of just like, why? You know, what's the point? Like, why should I keep fighting? Like, what would you say to that person?
I'd say I know that it feels like you can't go on anymore. And I know it feels like you don't even have – I've had people say, like, I don't think anyone would even notice I wasn't here anymore. So what's the purpose? And I'll say, that's what I want you to know, that that's a fear and that's a lie that's being told to your brain right now. And I want to remind you of the truth, which is you do still have purpose, you do matter, and we need you in this world. Because I have to get quickly to them, and you, and we need to talk ourselves to ourselves, not listen to it. And you have to find one hope, one spark, one thing. So I will say, if you are feeling like you can't go on another day and no one it feels like it doesn't matter, I want you to call one person right now. I want you to talk to them and say, tell me why I should be here. Because you need to hear it over and over and over again to get back up. I want you to think about in boxing, when someone's down and they're down, everyone's screaming, get back up. They are hurting. And they literally get the will within to win because they hear it. Well, I need you to call someone. I need you to reach out. That's why we always say, when you are in those moments, please reach out to someone. And by the way, if you know anyone's going through that, I know the last thing they want to do is talk to someone, show up at their house, go talk to them, go be by their side, send them a text. We need it to go both ways, because sometimes when you're in that spot, you can't do it alone, and sometimes you really need someone else. So be there for someone. I had a friend that was suicidal. I showed up at her. I said all the things I said, and I knew they weren't able to pull it. So I went and got them and said, we're going out right now. And they're like, absolutely not. I said, yes, we are. Get up and get dressed. We're going. And I made her laugh. And then she started, I said, come on, let's go. As soon as I could shift her state, I was out of that moment where they thought, I don't want to go on anymore. So that state feels like their whole world, but shift their state for a second, and then they could shift their life. It's a mental game. It's a mental battle, and we got to win the battle.
So true. It's all about perspective. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. We do have a question from Wendy. She has a really sweet message for you, Dar. She says, fantastic show. I am in my window of life, Cancer, and I really love you, Dar. You always inspire me.
Aww. Wendy, I am sending you so much love, so much. And this is not a period. This is just a comma we were going through. It's a hard space, but you will endure. You will endure. And you know, I think putting all the love around you and anything I could do, you let me know.
Oh, that's awesome. Wendy, if you want to come up on stage, just shoot me a message. Let me know. I mean, you can talk with Dar, but thank you so much for sharing that. That is so sweet. Before we end the show, if you just want to offer one piece of actionable advice that anybody listening to the show now or later on can take and start implementing in their life, whether it's a piece of advice you give your clients, something that you implement in your life every single day, Coach Dar, that really changed your life, what would be, if you had one more thing to say that you haven't said yet, what would it be?
For some reason, just because, especially what Wendy just shared, but there's an acronym, HOPE, Hold On, Pain Ends.
Oh, I love that.
That's what's coming to my heart, especially after what she shared. And that for all of us, no matter what's going on, I want you to always have hope. And people have said to me in the past, like, hope is like hope. No, you should say what it needs to be. And I'll say to people, we have to have hope, because hope is what we could look forward to. So hope is hold on, pain ends. And remember that if we just keep putting one foot in front of the other, or take one more day or one more second and just keep going, we will get to the other side of it. Mm-hmm. We've never had it where our whole life, every day has been awful. Mm-hmm. We've had moments that are hard and we've had moments that are great. When the great days are coming, and you know when they are, when you feel really good or you've been somewhere, bottle that up mentally. Make that a mental memory that you get to pull from. So when it's hard, you go, oh, I remember that moment. I can't wait to get back there, and I will again. And that gives you hope. Have hope also that there's something bigger than us that's overseeing it and that is alongside you. You're not alone. And collectively, our light and our energy and our love is what's all going to get us through this. So love more, serve more, care more, and really show up trying to be the best version of yourself. And then hold on, the pain will end. We'll get through this together. And when the next bout comes and the next valley, we'll get through that again. But let's do this together, not alone.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
What an amazing show. I seriously thank you so much for your time tonight. I thank Wendy, Woody, everybody that joined. Thank you so much for staying with us. Really, I feel so inspired. I cannot wait for everyone to replay the show, and I can't wait to post it to my RSS feed. Once again, if you want to connect with Dar, feel free to check out her website at coachdar.com.
And follow on Instagram too, because I put out at the Coach Dar inspirational stuff every day as a pay it forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cultivating Curiosity podcast. If you enjoyed it, can you please do your girl a favor and leave me a review? Also, don't forget to follow this show on your platform of choice so that you are the first to know when a new episode is released. Until next time, stay curious.